shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Yes, for the samples, because seasonal allergies are no joke in the state of Tennessee.
Or Kentucky, where I spend the summers at Hopetown. I spend most of the summer outdoors and could not function without allergy relief.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
You just described my exact state in waking up, minus the need for coffee.
I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for years, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can be outside with the kids at camp without my eyes watering like a fountain, and I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat.
But at Hopetown, a frog could jump into your boat or your bed, and Claritin can't really help with that.
That's true, but they've got allergies covered. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear.
Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription.
Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
Use as directed. Hey friends, welcome to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast. I'm Sissy Goff.
And I'm David Thomas.
And I'm Melissa Trevathan.
And we're so glad you joined us for this conversation. Let's dive in. Justin Whitmill Early is a writer, speaker, and lawyer. He is the author of the award-winning books, The Common Rule and Habits of the Household, as well as the brand new Made for People. Through his writing and speaking, Justin empowers people to thrive through life-giving habits that form them in the love of God and neighbor. He and his lovely wife, Lauren, have four boys between the ages of 11 and 4. We loved our conversation with Justin and Lauren. They are in the trenches of the messy work of parenting and have incredible insight to share on family, friendships, and how to be real yet intentional with the kids we love.
Justin, Lauren, we are so excited to have the two of you with us today. We can't even believe that it worked, that you got here barely in time.
It's a miracle. God wants this to happen.
I know.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about that it was probably, when did your book come out, your first book?
My first book, The Common Rule, came out in 2019. And then Habits of the Household came out in 2021.
21. I was thinking it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the first book, but that's awesome that you've had three. Yeah. It was 2 years ago, right when it came out, I feel like, that Jess, our dear friend and producer, told us about your book and said, you've got to meet these people. You're going to love them.
My new favorite person, Jess.
So this has been a long time in the making to get to sit down with the two of you and talk about things. So just super excited and honored y'all to be with us.
Well, we are really honored because while we were writing this book, but really while we've been struggling with raising our four boys, your voices have been in our head. We've been listening and following along. So we were like, they want to talk to us.
I don't really feel qualified to be here.
No, we're so thrilled. And four boys has you in the trenches in a way where you got a lot to say.
Oh, yes.
Certainly. Well, will you tell us a little bit about your family, about where you're from, how old the guys are, all those things?
Yeah. You want to introduce the boys?
Yeah. So we have four boys. Our oldest, Wit, is 11 and a half.
You know, David has a Wit. Did you know that?
I don't think I knew that. Wow.
I do.
And I have a nephew named Wit.
Oh, that's
special. We got a lot of good synergy going. Yeah,
we
did.
Yeah. Well, Justin always thought it was the coolest part of his name, so we named our first son after him. So,
okay,
our second is Asher. He's 9. Then we have Coulter, who's 6, and Shepherd, who's almost 5.
Oh, they have great names.
Yes, they do.
We went with things that could be reduced to one syllable. Wit, Ash,
that's our only
Colt
theme.
And Shep. Yeah. So you can get Wit, Ash, Colt, Shep. Come on, like in the car now.
That's good.
You can move them. That's great.
Yeah. Have y'all heard CeCe Winans' song Shepherd?
No, I haven't.
Oh, y'all need to. I mean, it's about Jesus, obviously, but y'all need to listen to it. It's really
Sweet. Isn't that one of your favorites?
I love that song.
I just saw her concert. She sang it, so that's...
That's perfect. Okay. He was named with Psalm 23 in mind, so...
That's beautiful. Wow.
Well, you guys are even more amazing for being here to hear that. Like, you are in the throes of it all the time.
Mm-hmm. We are. We're writing from the trenches.
You are.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're here in Nashville and don't have kids with you, this may feel like a mini vacation for the two of you.
We had to wake up at 3:40 a.m. for a flight, but that is not as hard as waking up at 3:30 a.m. to care for a screaming child. So we're having a great start to our vacation.
Point. Yes. Okay, Justin, you went from being an attorney to writing about habits and spiritual formation, and now with your new book, Made for People, about relationships. So will you just talk about that journey from practicing law to writing about spiritual practices?
Let me tell you a story, because it actually makes sense to me. I started my career with Lauren, actually. We were missionaries in China right after we graduated college. I was there for 4+ years. She was there with me for 3 of those. And we loved it. It felt really called to China. But then I had a calling experience in the middle of my time in China where I felt the Lord calling me to go work missionally in law and business. And as you can see, I'm a man prone to calls. Those were two big moments in my life. But I really did feel called to law. So I ran at it with all the fervor of a man on a call, which was great in that I graduated towards the top of my class and did really well. We had our first 2 boys during law school.
Wow.
The first one the week of the law review write-on, which is when you're supposed to be writing all these big articles. The second one on the day my last final was to take place, which I missed.
That's stressful on both of them.
We have impeccable timing.
Our timing is great. So it went well in that respect, but I see now that I assimilated to all the typical habits of top law school life and young, ambitious lawyering. And what happened was that in my first year of lawyering, my life like collapsed in anxiety, panic, insomnia. It was like nothing I'd ever experienced. And I was trying to figure out what happened to me. And that was a long process, like a very, very difficult, dark time. But in hindsight, I started to see that I had become converted by my habits of busyness and anxiety. They had worked on my heart. And it was this really neat time in my life where the Lord actually showed me that your head, your worldview can go one way and your habits can go the other, and your heart is always going to follow the habits because they sort of train you. And I got really into thinking about how habits in our ordinary life shape us as almost liturgical impulses. So the Common Rule was born out of that crisis. And the Common Rule is a book about 4 daily and 4 weekly habits to guide spiritual formation in everyday life. Then I realized, well, I should probably apply this to my life of kids and parenting. And that's where Habits of the Household was born, in another mini crisis of realizing I've worked on all these tech and work habits and busyness and rest habits, but I'm still regularly yelling at my kids in the evening. What's going on there? And so Habits of the Household was a journey into that. And Made for People, I can talk about that in a minute because then the story gets long, but that's kind of born out of realizing that you need people in your life to do any of the above, any habit, any parenting. You need people by your side.
Well, it has obviously made such an impact on so many families and has been very celebrated and beloved. And that's what I was curious, kind of what prompted you to do that. But what have you seen? How have you seen the impact of it since?
The biggest thing that I have seen from Habits of the Household is actually myself changing as a parent. So I have great hope that some of the routines that we do with our boys, like family dinner or bedtime prayers and liturgies, that these shape them in some ways. But I think first and foremost, thinking hard about your rhythms of parenting helped me realize that I am a child of God before I'm a parent of children. And if I'm not thinking about why am I so angry when they misbehave, or why do I get so frustrated when they lash out because they feel unloved, I do the exact same thing. All these questions about why am I this way? Doing little things like pausing to pray before a moment of discipline or a bedtime liturgy where I sort of calm myself down so that I can calm them down. These are ways that I start to realize, oh my goodness, a lot of this parenting is about myself becoming a disciple so that I can disciple my children. So I, you know, there's a lot to say about how it impacts them, but first and foremost, just we would raise our hands and be like, we're messy in the trenches, parents who are being formed by the Lord through these habits.
Lauren, we know from reading Habits of the Household that you are the heart of your home. And what difference have you seen in the lives of your boys because of the intentionality that you and Justin practice at home?
Well, first of all, Justin, he only tells the good stories about me in the books, which I'm so grateful for.
I'm allowed to tell bad stories about myself, but I'm not going to.
No, I just say that to be that, yeah, definitely in the trenches. We were joking, talking about like this question on the way up on the flight. And I was like, well, does it count if I say they haven't killed each other yet? just because to be, yeah, I think the long game perspective is one that I'm excited to see that like when they go to college and they open the door to walk out in the morning, their default would be like, oh, we pray right now. Yes. And I'm not with my family, but I'm going to say a prayer right now because that's what our boys know. Like when we open the door, they rattle off the prayer. They're usually kicking their brother next to them, but they're still rattling off that prayer. And I think for me, it's the default, like our autopilot has some built-in things that we don't have to come up with on the fly.
Yes.
And I need that. Like this summer, when you're out of your normal every, you know, day rhythms for the school year and you're in summer, you need a few autopilot things that you're like, that was a win. We just prayed once today. Yes. Let's take that as a win. So I think having done some of the work up front, things do actually become a habit. And so a lot of our life is like, oh, that's just something we already do as a family. I want to grow more. I want to grow more as a parent into embracing how that's discipling me, but at least, you know, these things are happening on a daily basis. So,
and I'll maybe compliment her by saying one of the things that I see with the boys and her, one of the things that we practice all the time is what we call liturgies of reconciliation, which is a fancy way to say, let's actually do apologies and not just begrudgingly say them. Let's try to mend relationship afterwards by sometimes long hugs or walks or sits on the couch.
Together.
Well, so for the little boys, we have these things called the brother's hug where, you know, if they're in one of their hourly fights, you know, we do the say, you're sorry. Let's say I forgive you. But then we ask them if they're willing, and usually they are, like, can we hug? And we have to hold on to each other until both of us smile. And sometimes I do that with them.
That's awesome.
And it's really amazing how quickly that just sense of physical contact, which quickly becomes wrestling again, brings the smile back to their face. And they sort of, in an embodied way, remember that life is better together and when things are going well. And that works really great with the little ones. Now, with our 11-year-old, it's more like a let's sit on the couch or let's go for a walk. But what I was going to say about Lauren is I see, you know, Lauren will be the first to admit that she blows up at our kids. I blow up at our kids. We blow up at each other. Like the common thing that's typical in families is you have conflict.
Sure.
Because you're all these people in a household just, and as it turns out, we're all sinners.
Yes, right? It turns out.
Surprise. Yeah. But what I see happening all the time by habit after we practice these things is apologies and reconciliation. Actually saying, I shouldn't have turned around and yelled at you guys. I'm sorry. Or, you know, seeing Lauren say, hey, that was a bad moment for all of us. Let's all apologize. It's going to be normal that houses have conflict, but it's not necessarily normal that you reconcile. And that is one thing you can practice. And it's something I see Lauren practicing with the boys all the time.
I get a lot of practice at saying I was wrong with the kids, which is really good for my soul, you know?
And so good for them to see that modeled, that the grown-up that they love is fallible and that you not only are acknowledging that you fail, but that you're asking for forgiveness. I mean, what a beautiful path to be forging for them. So grateful for you.
Yeah, and it's good to remember like that is actually a habit that is healing and not just a record of my mistakes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's a great way to say that, yes. Yeah. So your new book, Made for People, talks about life-changing habits of friendships.
Yes.
Will you tell us a little bit more? I love that idea. Will you tell us a little bit more about what that looks like?
Yes. So I've spent years thinking about spiritually formative habits, right? And then applying them to the household. I've had too many crises that have borne out two books. This is my first book that actually doesn't come from crisis, but blessing, which is a neat thing.
Wow.
So praise God for that. Because yeah. I have, ever really since high school, had friendships in my life that I would say have kept me. I would not be walking with Jesus the way I am today without them. Mm. And that's just an incredible blessing that I long to share with people. But as I look out in the world right now, I see total crisis. So it's sort of like this place where God's gift, I think, to my life, an undeserved, unmerited grace of friendship, I look out on the world and I say, oh my gosh, we actually are literally in crisis. In my bag, I have the Surgeon General's 2023 report on the American epidemic of loneliness. And this is starting to become, you know, widely reported, but our bodies are literally falling apart and dying because we have neglected, forgotten how to do real relationship, which I call friendship. Mm. And the reason I'm so into, you know, you could write a book on community or relationship and all those are good things, but I'm really interested in trying to take this idea of friendship and show that there is a biblical story of us being made for people. Our first signs of the fall were relational shame and shame, vertical shame with God, that we were made for deep relationship. That's exactly what Jesus gives us back when he says, I've called you friends. You know, no greater love than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. And that there's really a story of saying, you are made for people, you need people. And to become more like Jesus necessarily means to look more like a friend, because that's who he is. Mm. And I look out and I think, you know, the make or break difference between people I see, this is anecdotal, but it is a lot of my life. The make or break difference of people who are doing life and either falling apart is not hard things. I mean, we all have hard things in life and marriage and health, everything. But when I see people walking through those hard things with friends, I see them clinging to marriage, you know, persevering with their kids, maintaining, you know, pushing deeper into their walk with Jesus. But the people who are going it alone, I just see disintegration everywhere. Mm. And so I feel like it's this biblical message. Friendship is key to who we are physically and spiritually. And I'm just so thrilled Zondervan let me write about it, because I've wanted to write about friendship for a long time.
So cool.
I'm so thrilled they did too. And Justin, I have to tell you how grateful I am for you to be writing about that and talking about that as a man too. And obviously I know the content is applicable to males and females in relationship, but I talk a little bit in my new book about how often over the years when I've been sitting with kids, I'll ask them, you know, like, tell me who are two or three of your mom's closest friends? And I feel like kids can answer that question consistently. Rarely do I find that they can't, but if I flip it say, who are some of your dad's closest friends? I cannot tell you how often they pause. And I think that's some of why we as males lead some of the scariest stats out there. I mean, we lead the stats for infidelity, internet pornography, substance abuse, suicide. And I think it is that everything you're saying, like, we were not meant to go it alone, but I think a lot of men do. And so I'm thrilled for you to be writing about that, talking about that. And I think for men to have a blueprint, not just identifying the need, but a blueprint that here's what it can look like. And that...
Yeah.
That's the title. Like, we were made for people. Yeah. We just were not meant to do this alone.
That's right.
Have you seen, this is so silly, but have you seen Welcome to Wrexham?
No, I haven't.
Do just I need was to? Thinking it.
So it is, I'm not even going to remember their names. Ryan Reynolds and
Rob McElhenney
bought a soccer team in England.
Okay.
Football team.
Oh, yeah. And I did hear about this.
It's a documentary about their journey. And there's this one episode that really is... encapsulates the issue of male friendships.
Oh, wow.
And you do this phenomenal job of talking about it. I told David about it to watch
it. It's
amazing. The show's hilarious and awesome
anyway.
That's so good.
The whole show, but this episode in particular, I think you will be so struck by.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate you recommending that and noting that, because I get asked increasingly now, like, so, you know, this is harder for guys, right? And probably. I mean, the first thing that I think of is that this is a key human need for everyone, right? So you look at the end of Genesis 2, and God looks at Adam and says, it's not good that you're alone, which is such a strange thing for God to say when he's obviously there with Adam, saying, you're actually lonely with me because I made you for people. And there's this just key moment at the end of Genesis 2 where Adam and Eve are naked and unashamed, i.e. fully known to each other and fully known to God. And I think about this for men, because we all need it, right? But I define friendship in the book as being fully known and yet loved anyway, right? And which I think is I use that definition because I think that's exactly what Jesus gives us. He knows us fully, and yet he sticks around anyway. And that's the amazing thing about the friendship of God. And I think I love being a man. I like growing my beard long. I love lifting weights. I like talking sports with the guys. I think the most manly thing that I do is sit on the porch with my two best friends, Steve and Matt, and actually tell the truth about our life. And we do this every other Tuesday. Like, we get together and I let my boys see, ideally, if they're learn one of this, if they're still awake, and usually at least the older two are, I like keep them up and they get to hang out with, you know, the Uncle Steve and Uncle Matt for a bit, because I want them to see friendship on display. Yes. I want them to see that I'm known, because kind of like we were saying earlier, everybody's got conflict in their house. Everybody's got sin in their hearts. I'm not good. I just don't have any secrets. And there's a difference, right? I mean, Matt and Steve know me. Matt and his wife, Kami, and Steve and his wife, Lindsay. I mean, they are friends to us in our parenting and our lives. I don't think you can do anything hard. I don't think you can do any hard thing in life without someone who knows you fully and loves you anyway. Mm. And it goes for men and women, but men really need to put on the example.
I love that. I was thinking when you were telling that story, I love that they call them Uncle Matt and Uncle Steve too.
Yeah.
And
I just realized our third doesn't know it's our real family. I remember
that moment when one of my kids was like, he's not your real brother. Like, you know, it was the sense of, I actually only have a sister. He is my brother. Your grandmother didn't give birth to him, but he's like a brother. Yeah. But I thought, I love that you're confused by that. Mm-hmm. It felt that familiar. Mm-hmm. So I love everything about that story. I'm glad you told that. And would love to also ask you, like, what was the most surprising or the most important thing you discovered in the research for this new book?
Oh, I'm going to cheat and go with two. The most surprising thing was looking into these stats on loneliness that are often trotted out. For example, chronic loneliness reduces your life expectancy to the tune of smoking 14, 15 cigarettes a day. Wow. So there's real, like, empirical health impact. Mm. But when I read those, I thought, you know, they're great to talk about. They're great for a podcast moment. But I think of loneliness as, you know, somebody sort of like locked away in their apartment, not seeing anyone. And you can sort of imagine all the health problems that come with that. What I found out in the research is that that is not the loneliness that people are talking about. The loneliness that the research talks about is being isolated emotionally, even though you might be physically surrounded with people. And I thought, oh my gosh, that dovetails with Genesis and the story of relational fracturing in the Bible so well. So it was really interesting to see that you can be lonely in a crowd. Your loneliness can be, you know, you not having that small group anymore, or feeling like you're a person who used to have friends, which is the current of American life. I think we become busier, wealthier people who used to have friends. And so making that connection of saying, oh my gosh, these loneliness stats, they're not about the people out there. They're about us in here. And if we're not relationally known, then we are in those stats. The second thing I came across that I really just sort of appreciate is it's common sense that people want friends. It's just not common practice. So nobody is surprised to say, oh my gosh, I was made for people. They think about it for a second and they're like, yeah. But the problem is I can't schedule it. And as I started to just anecdotally ask people and start to research, what do people want to know about this topic? Almost everybody is just saying, how do I do this in my busy stage of parenting and work? And, you know, the American current does not steward us into a life that's conducive for friendship. And so what I found was that people are wondering this. And here's the good news. Friendship has a wildly outsized impact compared to the time you put into it. Mm. Anything else that's necessary for physical survival or spiritual thriving, you have to do all the time. You know, eat multiple times a day. You sleep hopefully at least 7 hours a night. You're parenting and working much more than that. Hopefully you're praying without ceasing or reading your Bible regularly. But 1 hour of friendship every week or so completely changes the rest of your life. 1 hour of actually being known, telling your secrets to somebody and realizing, oh my gosh, this person knows my mess and they love me anyway. it changes everything about the week. So my encouragement to people is just, everyone has that hour. That is within your reach, and it will change everything about your life.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to be devil's advocate. So okay. I think parents would say yes, but in terms of schedules, I mean, I feel like that is the first thing to go for so many parents, especially in this day of travel, sports, and as intense as everything is academically and all the different things that parents have going on. So would you say why particularly for parents you feel like it's important to prioritize that time?
Oh my goodness. I think parenting is the hardest thing that I've ever done. Mm. And I think you agree.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, we learned Mandarin Chinese. I passed the bar exam. I've done things that people think, oh, that's challenging. Mm-hmm. I think parenting is so hard, which is why you desperately need other people helping you do it.
Yes.
I just don't think you can do something as hard as raising children without friends in your life who know when you're messing up, who are praying for your kids, who are praying for those broken relationships, who are praying for those problems that no one can explain and you keep searching for solutions. It's just such a deep need. And anything else, I don't say the, you know, hour a week casually as if it's easy. No, I mean, nothing important is easy. It's right. still hard. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it's simple. It's available to us. It's a known quantity. If you start saying, all right, maybe instead of doing one extra sports activity, or maybe instead of watching one more and it's way easier to turn on Netflix in the evening than to go be vulnerable with a friend. But the saving power of a schedule of just saying, hey, Lauren, I'm going to make it possible for you, whatever night this week you want to go out, I'll take care of bedtime. I'll finish the dishes. You go out and, like last week, it was the book club, right? And she returns that favor to me. She's saying, you know, on every other Tuesday night with Matt and Steve, I got it. You know, I'll send you out. You have to be in it together. Mm-hmm. But I think me, I know she'll come back a better mom, a happier wife, and a more full human being because of that hour of friendship. Mm-hmm. And she knows the same is happening with me. I'm not just going to shoot the breeze with the friends. I'm going to become a more full human, someone who's a little bit more like Jesus. Mm. And when you understand that these are the stakes, parenting's hard. You need to enable each other to have friendship in the midst of parenting. I think that's when you realize, all right, let's make time for that hour. And what would you add to that?
Yeah, I would just add that, I mean, I think especially it's been easier for him to get that hour over the past 10 years than it has for me, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I think men take advantage of, like, you have more flexibility in the evenings because you're not birthing the children. You know, they're just that limit on me has made it more challenging. But there's also more creative outlets that I've been able to pursue. Like, one thing our church does, which is amazing, is we have a standalone Sunday school hour, and they encourage folks to put their kids in Sunday school. And there's adult Sunday school, but they're also like, get a coffee with a friend.
Oh, and that's so great.
Like, they're like, relationship is important. We understand for parents, like, that's really hard. So I've done prayer walks with friends during that hour around the parking lot. I have sacrificed one of my two preschool mornings to a small group with other moms, which I regretted half the time, you know, because I was like, I got so much to do at home. This is I only have two mornings of preschool. Yeah. That's 2 hours and 45 minutes. But you know what? Looking back, I'm actually glad I chose to go be in a vulnerable community with five other women, even though my house wasn't as clean as I wanted it to be, by a long shot. You know, I'm not saying that, like, oh, my health, you know. I think a lot of women especially can get into the productivity wheel and just realizing, like, no, this has to be up there in priority. And if you don't sacrifice something for it in the little kid years, it's never going to happen. But you can if you make it a priority. And it's... We talk about goals of like, oh, Justin's going to hang out with his best friends every other week. And usually that's more like 1.5 times a month. But it happens regularly.
Right.
And I think for me, same thing. It's like, I'm going to do this Bible study. I show up half the time. That's a win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, approximating rhythms is a win.
Yeah, but it's booked on the calendar. And so therefore, it happens. And something's one of the habits we talk about, especially for family devotionals, is something is better than nothing.
Yeah.
And I think in the little years, friendship, you can't just wait till your kids are old enough. I think there's this trap when you have like babies, you're like, well, when they're in school, I'll have more time.
Right.
And then you get there and you're like, it's actually more schedulally challenging. The logistics are even more crazy. I'll just wait till they're in college. And then it's too late. You don't have any friends anymore.
Yep, that's
so
right.
Something is better than nothing in the short term.
I like how you noted the woman's side of the struggle too. Because I think back to your question, if men struggle to be vulnerable, and I think they do, I think at least in our stage of life, the women in our life, it's hard to schedule. Like, so men might struggle to open up, but it's really hard for women to make the time because of the demands of like these child rearing years. And so I just would say to the husbands out there, you need to help your wife make time for friendship because she needs it. She can't do it without your help.
It's so good.
And, you know, maybe the wives can encourage their husbands. I need you to be vulnerable with other guys because otherwise you're not being the best husband you can be to me. But I think there's two ways we can help each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've seen so much how important it is for it to not just be your marriage. And I think that's, you know, some people can make the excuse of like, I'm not going to go bend over backwards to find time with friends because our marriage is really strong. And that's really great. But your marriage is only going to be strengthened. I'm so thankful for Justin's friends. Mm.
You can't bear these burdens alone.
Yeah, there's been many times where I'm like, I'm so glad they're talking to you about this.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes me think about C.S. Lewis, The Four Loves.
I've
thought about that so much. That was probably part of your research.
That was one of, it stands as probably the best single thing that I read, right next to Bonhoeffer's Life Together. Mm. There's not enough writing on Christian friendship.
That's what I thought when I read The Four Loves. I was so glad he addressed it like he did.
But that is one of the best. So if anybody wants to go back to the you know, the OG writing on friendship, C.S. Lewis's
he's got it.
Essay on Philaeus.
Yes, that's so good.
Lauren, you mentioned older kids, and we work with a lot of parents of adolescents and would love to just ask the two of you, like, what encouragement would you give to parents of teens who maybe didn't adopt these life-giving rhythms and habits early on? Like, is it too late? What would you say to those parents?
Well, first I would say, I think there would be an inflection point, and there's one coming really soon for us where we're going to have to rethink a lot of the rhythms with older kids. And so a lot of what, you know, we've done isn't going to apply. And I think at any point when you find yourself in a new season with your kids, you need to really sit down and rethink. And I think the amazing thing about God is he even built it into our world. We wake up each day, there's a sunrise. Spring follows the winter. There's always time for a new start. And preaching to my own heart here, because I think it's easy to think, well, it's over and done. I failed in that area. And it's just not true. Mm. I mean, I think so many of my friends came to faith in college, you know, or later. And starting at any point to build a spiritual formation foundation is going to be fruitful, and God will use it.
Amen. You know, whenever you talk about habits, people start to think about the productivity, like things they need to do, things they ought to do. It can become a legalistic area. And so I try to be really clear. Habits don't change God's love for you. It's just that God's love for you should change your habits, right? So all of what we're talking here is in the realm of grace. It's in the realm of things that God will help you do despite your failure and your mess. And so, you know, I started this project when Whit was like, you know, 7 or 8, I guess. And in some senses, I could have thought, oh, it's too late. We missed this stage. But look, the Lord was working in our family. I never really thought about spiritual discipline until I was 30. So, you know, I missed it. So all of this is just to say, you can start anywhere. Mm-hmm. Grace means, if it means anything, it means today doesn't have to be like yesterday. You're not wed to the bad things that came before you. And by the way, like Lauren was saying, you can be made new. And I look at my life, and I thought my parents did a fantastic job with my upbringing.
They did. And they're the best. Like,
they're wonderful.
Yeah.
And I really messed up in my teen and adolescence. I mean, I really made some big mistakes. And some of my most formative moments was in their graciousness in those years. Presumably, they did a good job when I was, you know, 10 and under. But what I remember was some of their gracious kindness and patience with me when I was in adolescence. And I mean, I just think that says something. You can start anytime.
Yeah.
And that's good news. So, you know, this isn't a burden. Shouldn't be. Nobody thinking about habits of the household or spiritual rhythms in the home should think, oh, this is, I got so much to do. No, Jesus said his yoke is easy and his burden is light. The heaviest, hardest thing to do is to continue to do nothing. Because American life, the norm, the current you're in already, that is really crushing. Mm. Like, so do nothing and it will just get worse. But take one small step towards adding a little spiritual discipline structure to the home, and that you will find, oh, that was a light burden. In fact, I want to do it again. and that's grace coming through.
Mm. I love that your parents were as intentional as they were with you, it sounds like, in those years. And thinking about your boys and the ages that they are, which you mentioned, and this season of our podcast, we're talking about ages and stages. And if you had to say what you feel like, even thinking about habits and rhythms, even as you think about the age of each of the boys, what do you feel like they need the most?
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I like this one.
I think it's hard because everyone's kind of, well, the middle two are solidly in the same stage, but the other two are changing.
Yes.
So I think it's been on our mind.
Yeah.
Fresh. I don't know what to do in an adolescent boy. So I'm like,
I'll list
your guess is as good as mine.
I'll list things off the top of my head and you tell me what you, the little Shep who's 4, almost 5, he just needs constant contact right now.
Actual contact.
Yeah, tight hugs. And, you know, he's so much, he wants to punch me in the stomach so bad. And he means it in love. Mm-hmm. And I welcome it. I just say, just make sure I'm ready, you know?
Yeah. He punched the piano teacher the other day in the stomach without a warning. That was, we got to work on that. Yeah.
I say often, and I'm actually not kidding, that I exercise not to hit PRs or goals, but to be a good dad because the physicality in the younger ones, they just want to be wrestled. Mm-hmm. Because Coulter and Shep, and those are the 4 and 6 year old, that's the way they're experiencing love. And I'm not sure that every boy is like that, but every boy I've raised so far has been like that. With Wit, I'll skip to the oldest. He is 11 now. I think I'm starting to see a deep searching need for, do you see me, and can I be a part of your what you're doing? So he's shown real talent at music, and I'm sort of an amateur lover of guitar and drums. So playing with him and sort of calling him up to let's jam together, it's sort of a big boy and it's adult thing that we do. I think he feels a new level of acceptance. He's not as interested in wrestling me anymore, and it starts to get awkward because he's kind of big, you know. Mm-hmm. But he loves just to do an activity that feels like a big boy activity, an adult thing. I think Asher at 9 just wants to be around us and do things together. He's a good times guy. He wants to be included.
Yeah, we had a breakthrough with him though the other day. Justin really challenged him to, our 2nd and our 4th have the biggest mood impact on the family as a crew. We've picked that up. They're the most like Justin. For good or bad.
What is it?
It's powerful. So he can, he just really is always looking forward to the next exciting thing that's going on, you know, movie night, you know, soccer game, what may have you. But if it's not coming soon, drags everyone down. And so we just, Justin challenged him like, hey, do you know that when you are kind to your younger brothers, you make their whole day better and you light up their life basically because they, you know, just want to do whatever he's doing. And he was like, I want to ask you at the end of the day if you made a choice to be kind to them or you made a choice to act out your mood. And it was such a better day. We were like, what?
Wow.
It worked. And he's not been capable of that before. And so it was just a turning point of, oh,
yeah.
We're at a level of he has a little bit more agency over his emotions and his choices.
That's right.
How can we help him recognize that he, his feelings are not in control of him? We got that from the Straubs. Jocelyn Christie Straub has this great children's book that I just repeat the mantra all the time to myself too. A feeling is, it's just a feeling. It's not in charge of me. So that's my challenge for Asher is like, learn that. And Coulter, I think we just need to pay more attention to. He's the 3rd kid.
He's so joyful. Sometimes he's easy to, he's like, you're happy, you're fine. You know,
we don't need to. He's also 6 and it's just, I think it's my favorite boy age so far, 5.5 to 6.5. So he's just he's a joy, although he is starting to come out of it, which is a bummer. But
yeah,
I mean, he'll still be his great self. But yeah, I think we have the challenges of the big family. There's different challenges than a small family, and paying specific unique attention in certain stages when yes. they're the easier kid is one of the big family challenges.
Sure.
So, that's, yeah. And Shep and I are on a little different journey than Justin because...
You don't like wrestling as much.
Right? Yeah, I don't like being punched as much.
Not your love language.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I do tackle them in the pool now. Yeah. All my boys really respond well to me being physical with them too. So we do a lot of pool wrestling in the summer.
I do. Some of the things I've appreciated about you guys doing the age and stage stuff is it encourages me to the extent I can try to get some one-on-one time mm-hmm. with them. And this isn't going to be daily and it's not going to be 3 hours out, but just trying to, you know, go for that conversation with Asher after the other two boys went to bed and thinking this is a moment I can have with him. And what, you know, especially when you get a couple kids around the house, they start to know, oh, mom and dad are singling me out. Sometimes that can be bad, but I think a lot of times they just feel loved, you know, to be pulled aside for 15 minutes and shown love in their own way. Thinking of the ages and stages specifically helps me do that.
Oh, I just thought of one other thing that's kind of more related to habits of the household. So when Justin wrote the book, all of our kids were 10 and under. And so although I think the habits are adaptable to any age, that's what came out of our lived experience was 0 to 10. But now that we have two older kids who stay up much later, just this summer, I was realizing like we need a new bedtime routine for the big boys. And so something that that we've been tossing around and we're just experimenting right now is with like a evening prayer with our big kids instead of a bedtime blessing as a way to both say, okay, this is your time to go be by yourself. Don't bother us anymore. But as a way to invite them into the evening prayer and just, you know, we're experimenting with some simple ones that we can memorize and doing the Lord's Prayer together and maybe doing a short examine, which is thinking about your day. And right now it's very much like haphazard. We did it like, I don't know, 6 times this summer, but just the idea of, oh, if we could have this rhythm and then that would be their cue. So like, this is now your evening to put yourself to bed and to do your own bedtime routine because we need the space, Justin and I do. And we kind of drifted from that little kid stage where everyone goes to bed and then you have some time and all of a sudden we didn't have that anymore.
Yeah.
So, and also little kids, you pray for them. And now we want to start bringing them in to pray with them in the evening. So that's something we're working on. So parents of older children, tell us what you do.
It sounds like a great reminder that some of the habits of the household stuff about prayer, I have realized is not only great because it's sort of teaching them to pray without ceasing and bringing them into prayer, but it also punctuates the day. Mm-hmm. It helps you say, when we pray before we leave for school, it's very short. We just say a little prayer together, but it just marks a moment. Okay, we're leaving the house now, or hey, it's your bedtime now, so we're going to pray because that's what we do. And yes, it's prayer. It's wonderful. It also helps them understand, oh, that's right. I have to go to bed now. Right. And for Lauren, that's like, now we get time alone. So prayer it's practical in like creating a rhythm of the day. And something's going to create that rhythm. Using prayer is a wonderful way to teach your kids that should be the rhythm of the day.
We had Vanetta. 25 minutes of back and forth yelling and argument stage for a while.
That wasn't
bedtime.
A good rhythm.
So we're done with that rhythm.
Go to bed.
We need to make a new one.
Yes.
Great. You all, now is the moment in the podcast where we move from the substantive to the silly. We like to go from parenting to food and would love to ask you a 2-part question.
Okay.
So part one is queso or guac. Part two is what's your favorite kind of taco?
Queso if it's a true authentic Tex-Mex queso.
Okay.
Guac.
Okay.
And that goes along with my taco choice. Guac because it's just more caloric, more filling. I like lots of food and I pick whatever's on the menu that has the most meat in it. So if it's like, I don't know, a brisket taco or like a big fish taco or a fried chicken. Last time I was in Nashville, I had a fried chicken taco. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going for like the mass in the taco.
Yes.
For you.
I'm going to say fish tacos.
Good choice.
If we end up in Richmond, where should we go for tacos?
Where should we go for tacos?
The Vale.
Yes, yes. There's a great brewery near our house that has a little pop-up Mexican in it called Ichumama.
Ooh.
And it has playground next to it, too, so it's really good for families.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean...
But it's also,
you'll love it.
Best tacos
like
in Richmond.
It's like really good, surprisingly incredible Mexican food.
Wow.
Just out of this little window.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I agree.
Our treat if you come.
All right. We can't wait.
We hope that happens.
Yeah. Y'all, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful, inspiring conversation.
We're so honored to be here.
So good to be with the two of you.
If you are enjoying the Raising Boys and Girls podcast, click follow on your podcast listening app to subscribe and not miss an episode.
Join us next time for another episode where we'll bring you help and hope on your journey of raising boys and girls.